Hello and welcome to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We're the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And today we're doing season 6, episode 20 of Desperate Housewives, Epiphany. In this episode, I'm going to be doing the breakdown and Joel's going to be giving us his trivia. So what do you have to start us off with?
So this episode was directed by David Grossman and written by Mark Cherry, and it aired on the 25th of April 2010. So this is the fourth episode of the series to be centred on one character. The previous ones were The Best Things That Ever Could Have Happened, which was Eli Scruggs, Look Into Their Eyes and You See What They Know, which is Edie Britt, and Lovely, which was Robin Gallagher, which was obviously previously in this season. The end of this episode is a reference to the Alfred Hitchcock film Psycho, in which the main character Norman Bates, who is played by Anthony Perkins, kills a woman, wraps her in a shower curtain, and puts her in the trunk of a car. And in the film, Bates also kills his mother, just like Eddie. The first flashback episode of season 6, which marks another on-screen return of Brenda Strong as Mary Alice Young. This is her only on-screen appearance in season 6.
Yeah, she hasn't been around for a while.
No, she hasn't. It was nice to have her on our screens again.
Mm.
And then there is a user review on IMDb. Again, this is a user review. So this is a rando whose personal review.
A fan.
Of Desperate Housewives this is. And they have given it a 10 out of 10 and named it as unique episode with outstanding writing. And it is all written by All New Super Fake 6. Or it could have been All News Uber Fake 6. Mm. It depends on where you want the S to go.
True.
And it was done on August 2021. It was a very good review, actually, so I do have a lot of it. But unlike the rest of the series, this particular episode has aged pretty well and gained in relevance. What we have here is the prototype of the nice guy, or incel, which wasn't that much of a deal in 2010 as it is now. And similar tragedies have occurred all over the world, shining a light on how typical teenage desperation, bullying, and peer pressure can turn into hate and fester into serious mental health issues over the years.
So he's saying it's ahead of its time.
Yes. It asks the question how such a monster could come to be, and while it certainly hits a few tropes and stereotypes, it does what the series does so very well, which is making you understand the antagonists.
Mm.
The episode makes it abundantly clear that everyone knew what was going on and just couldn't be bothered, and when Lynette finally decides to commit and do something beyond nice words and gestures, it's too late. But every neighbourhood has a house like that, and every neighbourhood that figures out that there's a monster living there isn't all that surprised, even if that's what they tell the camera teams and reporters.
Right.
As usual, in the more serious episodes, the cast tops itself, and unlike so many of its episodes, this one lingered quite a while and got me thinking. Everyone here involved turned it into a high point of the series, and it makes the actual villain of the season pale in comparison.
Well, that was a pretty good review, actually.
I thought it was a really good review. Mm. I have edited that because it was longer, but I do think that that was a very well thought out review.
Yeah, indeed. And I like that this series does have a villain that you can feel bad for, which is Eddie.
Yeah.
But it's also got a villain who is just an outright monster who you don't feel bad for.
Mm.
I like that it has both.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, I love me an old Disney villain that's just evil for the sake of it. Those are the fun ones.
Yeah, but he doesn't really tend to like it when you try to humanize a villain.
Well, it depends on the context, but you gotta love a villain that's just evil for the sake of it. They're so much fun.
That's why we love Cruella.
Well, yeah, original Cruella, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
like
right.
She's evil for the sake of being evil. She's
OG
not...
Maleficent,
yeah.
Mistress of all evil.
Right? She is the mistress of evil. The title of this episode, once again, it comes from the song of the same name in the Stephen Sondheim musical, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Oh, I love Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
So good.
And so, this week, what happened? So the number one song in the USA was Nothing On You by B.O.B. featuring Bruno Mars. And I completely forgot that song existed until I read it.
Me too. At first I was like, what? Oh,
yeah. And the number one song in the UK was Once by Diana Vickers.
Once.
So we are still going through the whole X Factor kind of thing. Diana Vickers didn't even win the X Factor.
She was quite indie pop, wasn't she?
She was. I really liked her first album. So on the 20th of April, which was the Tuesday, the transocean-owned oil rig Deepwater Horizon explodes, leaking 4,900,000 barrels of crude oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Or is it crude oil? I don't know.
I think it's crude oil.
Yeah. At least 7 people were injured and over a dozen were missing at sea. And since then, a movie has been made of Deepwater Horizon.
Oh, that's what that's about. Sorry, people at work talk about that a lot. Now I know.
The United States Supreme Court, in ruling on United States v. Stevens, strikes down a law outlawing videos that depict animal cruelty.
Good.
Which is you know, great.
Although shame, a bit late.
Right, shame it happened in 2010, but whatever. And on April 24th, Professor Stephen Hawking warns humanity about the dangers of contacting extraterrestrials, which I thought was rather fitting, considering that right now in the Supreme Court, there is currently ongoing cases from people that are very high up in the US government claiming that there are aliens and the US government holds evidence of this.
Oh. Okay, that's interesting.
And that is all of my trivia. Except for a little bit more, but I'll do that at the end.
Perfect. Let's get into the episode. But first, we're going to have a break so that the upstairs neighbour can finish their washing cycle.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, be right back. So, this previously is extremely short. Previously, Lynette won in her fight with Irina, leading to her and Preston breaking up, and her murder at the hands of Eddie, making Irina the third or fourth victim of the Strangler, including Julie.
It's short because really this episode only progresses Lynette's storyline.
Yeah.
There is nothing else.
Well, Eddie's.
Yeah, but it's unlike the main housewives.
So the episode opens with Mary Alice talking about the house of a monster and how he may have become the man he is today. We cut to inside the rundown house and we see Eddie with his alcoholic mother. When he leaves, his mum goes into his room to search for alcohol, and instead she finds his journal of newspaper clippings about his victims, much like some sort of trophy book.
I have lots of thoughts on this opening scene.
Oh, already?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know the house is supposed to show that Eddie's sort of had a hard life and that they don't come from much, Eddie and Brenda. Is it Brenda? Barbara. But girl, clean the windows at least.
She ain't cleaning shit.
Like, there's nothing clean about this house. And it already sets Eddie's whole episode arc up from the very beginning of when Eddie's mum's there, like, have you got any scotch? And she's like, no, I'll get you some whilst I'm out. And then he says to her, you can wait that long, can't you? And he puts his hand on her shoulder and she just pushes the hand off of her shoulder. It's not even like she moves her shoulder. She literally physically pushes his hand off of his shoulder, which is even worse than just someone kind of like shoving it off.
Yeah.
Because it's like the physical, like, I don't touch me. I do not touch me.
Yep. This is a nasty woman. So this room is almost like his mind.
Yeah.
It's like he can't escape internally or externally.
No, really good point. Yeah.
Everywhere's horrible. She then recounts when she first met him. Mary Alice.
Barbara then recounts when she first met Eddie.
So she had a break while running and said hi to him as he was outside his house while his parents were arguing inside. The dad then comes outside and said that he never wanted a kid anyway, and he then leaves the mum as a single parent with Eddie. So he's clearly had a pretty rough time.
Yeah, and at this point Eddie's like four. He's very, very, very young, just playing out in the front yard. And at this point in the past, the house looks really nice. So it's since the dad leaving that it's all seems to have gone downhill. But at the same time, I can't imagine it would have been very nice for Eddie in those first few years. Because there's clearly tension between Barbara and the dad.
Enough for him to just pack up and leave and say that he didn't even want a kid anyway. So God knows what that was like growing up.
Yeah, but loved Mary Alice calling him out.
Mary Alice kindly comes over again with food and to check up on Eddie and his mum. They chat and Eddie's mum says that she has no family or friends who can help, which leads me to believe that maybe the dad might have been a bit abusive as well, actually.
Mm.
So eventually, Mary Alice leaves them to it and there's this weird vibe that the mum doesn't like Eddie much because he looks like his father.
Just
that was weird.
Like his father. That's her catchphrase. That is Brenda's catchphrase throughout this entire episode.
And you just know that trouble was bound to happen after that weird vibe.
It's not Eddie's fault he looks like his dad.
Mm. She comes back over another night to find that Eddie's in the house all on his own, and we see that the mum is at a bar. So she goes to the bar to berate the mum and demand her to come home. Can we assume that Eddie is just outside in Mary Alice's car or something? And
yes,
she hasn't just left him at home alone as well?
No, because Mary Alice does say in this scene, I've got Eddie in my car.
Perfect. Okay, good. So at home, she tries to make excuses, but Mary Alice is having none of it, and the mum promises to never do this again. I've called her the mum throughout most of this episode until the end when I heard someone say her name, Barbara. And I was like, oh, it's Barbara. So when she leaves, the mum hugs little Eddie and says, it's not your fault you ruined my life.
Wow. Just wow. I have to say, Mary Alice is a queen in this episode. Like, I've never seen her like this. Usually we see her as the guilty, depressed mother, you know, that murdered the woman to keep the child. But this is a bad bitch. Like, she's just on her merry way, exercising, shaming negligent mothers. Love it.
Yeah. So that's just a little bit of backstory on little Eddie growing up with Mary Alice before the incident with Mary Alice. Now, let's move on to Gabby. Mary Alice says that Gabby first met Eddie when she first moved to the neighborhood before the movers arrived with all of her and Carlos's stuff. She looks around the house when hearing noises and finds Eddie playing in her bathtub. Apparently he got in through the window and he's been playing in the house while it's been empty. She gets rid of him, but he then says that she's really beautiful, so she lets him stay a little longer. He offers to help unpack when the movers arrive, and Gabby is absolutely fine with that.
He's such a polite little boy. He's like, can I still play here?
Gabby needs to get some friends.
She does.
She really does.
When Gabby calls Carlos, as she's moaning at him because she's bored waiting for the movers, his suggestion to her is to go get her nails done.
Yeah, that's a very Carlos and Gabby conversation.
I love that.
I'm bored. Well, go spend money. We then see her using the boy to paint her toenails when the doorbell rings, and we have a clip.
Should I get that?
No!
Shh! Keep your voice down. Might be one of those Stepford wives with another welcome to the neighborhood cake. I mean, really, does it look like I eat cake?
Some of the neighbors are nice. That lady with the red hair makes her own Halloween candy.
You mean the one whose parents named her after cheese? No, thank you. I like my robots a little more lifelike. Though she's not as bad as that blonde chick who's always yelling at her kids. There are people on fire who are not as loud as she is. And I thought maybe for a second that Susan Meyer lady and I could be friends. And then she started talking. Okay, good. I think they're gone.
So they eventually get up off the floor. Funny story, my auntie made me do this once.
Oh, really?
So this is the auntie I don't really see anymore, but I was around her house one day and she was expecting a friend of hers to come over that she didn't really like, which is basically every friend that she ever had. So we went upstairs to my cousin's room and she was like, you have to be really quiet. And then the doorbell rang and she was like, shh, be quiet. I want her to think that we're not home. We just had to wait upstairs. But then she said we couldn't come downstairs in case she was waiting at the door. So we were up there for about half an hour.
It wouldn't be right to have an episode of Desperate Housewives where Gabby's slagging off the other ladies and we don't have it as the clip. I feel like that's just tradition now.
Yeah, they even hit the floor. They hit the floor.
I wonder who it was that was actually at the door. If it was all of them or just one.
So she mentions that he's been over every day and he says that his mum likes her alone time with her new boyfriend, so she doesn't mind. And that's just really sad.
Yeah, because Gabby even says here, like, maybe I should call your mother. And he was like, no, she's got a new boyfriend and they're alone time, blah, blah. That's how the conversation goes. So Gabby does have that moment where she's like, maybe I should
stop using this child to cure my loneliness and boredom.
Yeah, because she uses this child for child labor. Like, he unpacks, he does her nails, and then they end the scene with him saying, I'll cook lunch.
Yeah, it's proper Gabby behavior.
Yeah.
So later, Gabby is washing dishes by hand.
I know, what the hell?
Because apparently her maid is sick.
Xiaomei, what a throwback.
When Carlos gets home early. So they have a bath together, and then Carlos freaks out because Eddie comes into the bathroom. Apparently he climbed through the window when no one answered the door. And this is really weird. It's like he thinks Gabby is his girlfriend and Carlos is like on his territory or something.
Right, because he sees Gabby and Carlos in the bath, which Carlos comes home for a nooner. First, Gabby clearly thinks it's romantic until she realises it's a nooner, but it's been a nooner from the get-go, Gabby. Like, how naive are you?
Yeah.
Afternoon delight. It's made with pineapple, coconut, and marshmallow fluff.
Glee references aside.
Yeah, right now. But then when Eddie sees them, his initial reaction is, who's this guy to Carlos?
Yeah, that was such a mood. That was hilarious.
I don't blame Carlos for reacting this way.
No.
Like, if I found out that B's best friend was some 9-year-old kid that he spent every day with, I'd be concerned as well.
Well, I mean, Gabby does kind of make that a habit later.
That is true.
Oh my, maybe we should.
The signs were really early on.
Oh my.
Anyone can see, though, that Eddie is just a lost child that needs someone to show him some form of love.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Anyone can see that. Any form of love. He's been deprived of it for so long. So anyone can see that.
After kicking him out, Carlos says that they should she should get some adult friends, but Gabby feels bad for Eddie, so she goes outside to talk to him. She tells him that they both need friends their own age, and Eddie doesn't like this. He says she's not so pretty, and runs home to find his mum and her boyfriend getting it on the sofa.
Call out Gabby!
He then grabs a BB gun from the house and shoots a bird, which is a very known early sign of psychopathy.
Yeah.
I love that. Is that what it's called?
I'm going to go for it.
When you grow up with psychotic tendencies.
Yeah. I love how offended Gabby was when he essentially called her ugly.
Yeah.
You're not pretty.
And you're not very bright.
And she goes, oh, Eddie. Like giving him a chance to turn around and say, I'm sorry.
But he knew how to get her.
Right.
For Bree, we see that naturally, she knows him because she hired him to do some cleaning work on the outside of her house.
Hmm.
So Bree knows him through services and labour.
For Bree, the proof was in the pudding.
So bear in mind that he is now a teenager. He's the age that we know him as.
Yes, in high school now.
She pays him for his good work, including a bonus, and suggests that he use the money on his girlfriend, and he says he doesn't have one. He says that girls don't really notice him, and Bree tries to give some advice on girls and tells him to actually introduce himself to the girl that he likes at school. So they talk about her qualities, and she tells him to tell her that she has nice eyes, and then all the other steps like roses, jewelry, and such. She's teaching him to woo her.
The intention here is sweet, but high school kids wouldn't see this as wooing. They would see it as being inappropriate, especially if the girl doesn't like the guy back. If the girl doesn't like the guy back and the guy just keeps buying her things and trying to woo her, that's when it turns kind of into stalking.
Yeah, Bree, kids are brutal. First of all, don't teach him to become a creep, but also, do you not know how a girl's going to respond to a guy like this in school?
No.
Oof. No. Bree then goes to Eddie's house, but only finds his mum. She says about her advice that she gave him on talking to girls, and says that she didn't realise that the girl he liked was her daughter Danielle, and says that Danielle doesn't return his feelings. The mum says that she'll talk to him, and Bree asks if she'll let him down easy. So Eddie then comes in, and the mum accuses him of stalking Danielle. She takes it completely too far, and then laughs at her son for trying to, and I quote, woo her.
Right, let him down easy, Barbara. Easy.
Calling him a stalker, telling him that she thought he'd only ever get with something inflatable, laughing at him.
I have a lot of thoughts on this scene. I'm full of thoughts on this scene.
I am full of thoughts too.
Full of thoughts. First of all, keep in mind that at the beginning of this scene, when Bree introduces herself to Barbara, she introduces herself as Bree Hodge.
Yeah.
Well, Danielle's in high school. So just keep that in mind. We'll discuss this at the very end of the episode because I have other things.
So she's Bree Vanderkamp.
Well, this is what we'll discuss. Just keep that in mind for now, guys. Bree is so conservative in this scene.
When?
Just when she couldn't bring herself to speak up. Like, I'd step up here and tear this mother a new one.
Yeah, and you'd think that Bree could do that.
Like
Bree has become a lot more of a badass as time has gone on.
Yeah. And Bree does kind of sort of say something, and she kind of stops Barbara by saying, I wouldn't laugh at him or something like that. And then as Bree leaves, she does whisper sorry to Eddie.
It's really sad.
It is really sad.
Your first bully should not be your parents.
No, it shouldn't be your parents.
The next day is a little awkward with him working for her after that whole embarrassing situation.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie is a little upset as he thinks that Bree told his mum that Danielle is out of his league. But Bree tries to say that that actually wasn't the case at all. She says Danielle can talk to him as a friend, and he cries and says that he wants someone to love him. Bree then consoles him and says that there's someone out there for him, but he has to be patient, and says that there are girls that will say yes to him, he just has to find them. And this is where these sort of incel behaviours started to really rear their heads.
Yeah, and this scene made me cry.
It was so
like,
sad.
To hear the desperation in Eddie's voice that all he wants is some form of love. Like, he just wants someone to love him because he's been so deprived of it, and bravo to the actor, because that sort of like humiliation cry and like the sudden flip was so well done. Like, oh my god, he was so good in this episode.
Yeah, boy needs therapy, because the kind of love that he wants from a girlfriend is not the kind of love that a girlfriend should or can provide.
No,
you can't have a girlfriend mummy.
No, you can't. And this is the problem. He's now got to the point where it doesn't matter what form of love someone shows him, he will always equate that with something romantic.
Eddie seems to have taken this advice completely the wrong way, though, and he drives to a really bad part of town to pay a sex worker to be with him. He grabs her some flowers from the car, and she laughs at him, clearly never expecting to have been given flowers. And the laughing seems to have broken him, as we then cut to a shot of the woman's dead body on the ground. Interestingly, this one doesn't seem to have been reported that we saw, like the other women on the news. But if you put all the girls, all of his victims in a row, what's the difference between the one that we didn't see reported?
Exactly.
A sex worker,
exactly.
Right?
And so from the eyes of the general public, the news outlets, the police, it's not anything to write home about. Even though it is, she is a human life. She is still a person.
I just thought that was interesting.
And she deserves that level of dignity. But no, you do bring up a really good point.
So, Susan sees Eddie in the cafe where he has a job, so it's a bit more recent now, and she finds him drawing a customer. She thinks that he has a lot of skill, but apparently his mum doesn't believe in his art skills, so Susan says that she can help him as she has a degree in art.
I have an expensive, worthless art degree that tells me I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, this is a very nice Susan in this episode.
It is a really nice Susan.
He then takes her coffee order and says that her husband ordered the same thing earlier, and Susan says that he is now her ex-husband, saying that Mike is now dating the woman across the street and claiming that they're all very happy. So we're basically season end of last season.
Yeah, season 5 we're now at.
Yeah. So Eddie tries to make her feel better, saying that lots of people would date her, but she just wants her coffee and her brownie.
Yeah.
Weeks later, Susan has been training Eddie and helping him with his drawing techniques, and she tells him that she's signed him up for a 2-week seminar at the Art Institute and already paid for it herself.
Wow.
He seems touched by this kind gesture, but says that he can't leave his mum on her own, and Susan tells him that he has to go for it, because when you love something that much, you can't let it go, whilst looking out of a window and seeing Mike across the street.
Susan looking out a window moment, very brief, but it's there.
He says it's the only thing that makes him happy, and he seems to have taken up the idea.
And we circle back to the point that we both made earlier, which is that Eddie now is incapable of equating any form of love with something other than romantic. Mm-hmm. So Susan has just done a very kind gesture in paying for him to go to art school. She hugs him, she puts her hand on top of his, and all of a sudden, Eddie starts to feel that love. And even though from Susan's point of view, it's almost, I guess, like a familial love, but Eddie seems to be starting to equate it that way.
Yeah.
And you can see it in his subtle reactions to the touches that Susan's giving him, his facial expressions. You say, yeah, Susan needs to be careful, girl.
Later, he comes over to Susan's and tells her all about the art classes and how well he's been doing. So I'm assuming it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, I don't... It feels like it's been longer.
Well, she said it was a 2-week art seminar. So I guess it'd be that 2 weeks plus how long it took to get to that 2 weeks. So the 2-week seminar could be like, it starts in a month.
True, that is true.
So I guess we don't actually know how long's passed.
No.
So Susan runs downstairs in a wedding dress and tells him that she's getting married to Mike. He's confused about all this, and Susan tells him about her and MJ getting kidnapped and how she fell back in love with Mike, and apparently she's actually marrying him in 2 hours.
And hearing that whole story back about Dave is wild now.
Yeah. Because he's probably like, what?
And she's so blasé about it. She's like, oh, well, you know, a madman kidnapped MJ and then I went after him and then Mike went after us. And
I mean, you'd think that would traumatise you for life, but they've been through so much. I mean, she was set up at gunpoint in season 1.
That's true. That is true.
And fell naked in bushes. What more can you go through? What can really affect you now?
Yeah.
He tells her not to marry Mike and tells her to marry him instead, saying that he has some money saved up. So Susan laughs a little, thinking that this is a joke, which worried me since he's been known not to react to laughter very well.
Yeah, which is weird.
Because he wants to be a comedian?
That's true!
Oh, not because of that. Okay.
No, that is completely true. I just think it's weird because most people don't react negatively to laughter.
Right? Imagine if they did laugh at his jokes at the club and he's like, shut up!
But actually, he wants to be a comedian.
Yeah, interesting.
What happened to the comedy when he's here trying to be an artist?
I don't know. But he sort of plays along with it, and she invites him to the wedding. And we then cut to his drawing of Susan, which he must have made in the art classes, and he was coming over to show her and tell her all about.
Yeah, because he walks into Susan's house and says they made the art class people made them draw people from memory.
Yeah, memory portraits.
So not only is it that he's drawn Susan, it's that he drew Susan from memory. He remembers exactly what she looks like.
Yeah, and he did really well. He's pretty good. Susan then gets married to Mike, as we've seen before, with a sad-looking Eddie in one of the back rows. Later that night, he goes over to the house and watches them through a window. Julie then walks out to the bins and Eddie strangles her, but he looks really shocked when she falls to the ground and he realises that it's Julie and not Susan.
Now,
oh, this brings
I
up.
Would
Do you
like
remember when
to
Susan...
say, yep, I would like to say at the beginning of the season, after Julie was strangled and Susan thought it was Catherine, she said to several people, maybe Catherine thought Julie was me, and everyone then laughed at Susan.
And then we
everyone,
laughed at Susan
everyone
on the
laughed.
Podcast.
Yeah, I know. And I laughed because I knew this was coming up. I knew it was supposed to be Susan that got strangled, but I wasn't going to say anything at that point.
I reckon the first time you ever watched it, you laughed.
Oh, the first time I ever watched it, absolutely, yes, I laughed because I was like, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, no one's gonna think Julie is Susan.
But they did. But it was a madman.
It was a madman. And I really actually quite like the way they've done this.
Oh, that's so good. That's such a good way to like go back to that story. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
We then see him at the hospital with flowers, and Susan walks in, thinking it's really sweet that he came over. She wonders how there could be such evil in the world, and wonders what kind of a monster did this to Julie, and Eddie says it wasn't a monster, as they're big and strong, and whatever or whoever did this is something weak and insignificant. He thinks whoever did this should just kill themselves, and Susan says that they'd be too cowardly to do that, which Eddie then agrees to.
He does, yeah.
Rough.
That was rough.
Poor
that,
Julie.
That's it. Like, she wasn't even supposed to be the victim.
No, it was actually Susan.
And I don't even know if Julie's ever going to get closure from this either.
Finally, Lynette. So Lynette and family, and Eddie, are playing a game of charades, or charades.
Oh, charades.
His mum then comes over to grab Eddie, and she's quite mean about it. They then argue as the mum thinks Eddie hid her stuff and starts getting aggressive. So Lynette, badass that she is, steps in and tells her not to talk to him that way. The mum thinks that he's a project to Lynette and that she takes him in so that she can feel better about herself, and then she does a walk off.
So we're now at modern day. This is essentially modern day Eddie now.
That was an awkward scene.
It really was. I love that Barbara comes, like knocks on the door, Lynette opens it and she goes, oh, hi Barbara, do you want to come in? And she goes, no, and then walks in. which is real power play. And I'm so glad that someone finally calls Barbara out.
Yeah.
Like, Barbara's talking like shit to Eddie. Lynette's kind of looking a bit uncomfortable and she's looking at Tom, and you can see in her face she's questioning whether she should step forward and say something. But then she does. And she finally, since the death of Mary Alice, someone else has stepped forward to say, you can't talk to your son that way.
Mm.
Like, that's your child.
Yeah, I freaking love Lynette in this episode. Not only is she standing up to Barbara, but she actually acknowledges that even though Barbara's being a nasty cow, maybe she's right about some things. Maybe people aren't doing enough. You know, like, she keeps that mentality of how she could do better in these situations. I love that. So the next day, we see Eddie looking from a window and thinking about when he was a kid. The mum distracts him and asks about alcohol, kind of like at the start of the episode, because, well,
it's the same scene.
But now we see him leave and go to Lynette's house while the mum breaks into the room. We see Lynette and Tom in the kitchen talking about the charades night, and Lynette talks to him about how upset she is with the whole Eddie situation and thinks that she should have done something more about it. She says she knows that bad things must happen in Eddie's house and that she's tired of doing nothing. Tom asks what her plan is, and we cut away before she tells us the plan.
Yeah.
So someone actually wants to do something about it, but like you said at the beginning of the episode, it is such a shame that nothing could have been done a bit sooner.
Yeah, and as nice as it is that Lynette now wants to do something about it, unfortunately it's too late.
Mm.
It is too late. Like, Eddie is lost. Eddie is no longer the Eddie that people would hope they want him to be. Eddie is now this serial killer that's deprived of love.
Yeah, I think we would have had to start doing something about it around the time that he shot a bird.
Yeah.
But at Eddie's house, he walks in to find his mum looking at his weird little scrapbook of strangulations. She asks if he had anything to do with them, which he nods yes to. And the mum breaks down and says that she didn't raise him this way.
You have to kill your mum now. She knows too much.
This is clearly laughable to Eddie, who tries to get her to just have a drink. Like,
yeah, I know. He's like, have a scotch. Honestly, Eddie could have bypassed all of this if when Barbara's like, is this you? Like, did you do this? Why have you got this? He could have literally just said, I'm fascinated by true crime.
Yeah, true. These days, that would pass.
Back then, people didn't have as much of a fascination with true crime as they do nowadays. But he could have, you know, been a pioneer.
So they fight for a little bit, but he gets the upper hand and strangles her.
I mean, this is great. She is there like, you're going to try and blame this on me. I'm not having it.
She's nuts.
She's so delusional. And then she tells him that she's calling the police, which you don't do to a serial killer.
No, she's, you see, if she drank a little bit less, she'd have a bit more of a clear mind.
Yeah.
And she could have handled it a bit better.
Like, I'd have bottled her too.
Oh my God, I don't know how he didn't do it sooner.
Right? No offense to Barbara or, you know, whatever, but you claim it's not your fault that you created Eddie. You then tell him you're calling the police and you slag him off. If I was Eddie, I'd have bottled you too. She's like, what do you think I'm doing, you moron? I'm calling the police.
She's horrid, isn't she? She's absolutely horrid. Now, we need to talk about this next bit because it's my favourite part of the episode. He's about to leave when he runs into Lynette at the front door. She asks him to move in with her, which is so sweet.
Yes, but so nice. I don't think she quite realises how difficult it's going to be bringing someone this troubled into your household when you've already got children that, you know, fairly young children. Penny's still quite young.
And Preston's only just been through all that.
Yeah.
With Irina.
On top of the fact that you are pregnant and about to have another child.
But it's really sweet.
It is.
Lynette then sees the mum on the floor and Eddie worries that he's been busted, but Lynette just assumes that she's passed out drunk.
Right, she's like, look at her. Dead drunk.
Oh my God. Brilliant.
I love how Lynette just sees her dead body and she's like, ugh, fucking drunk.
What a lush.
Just, if only Lynette had stepped in earlier in his life.
Well, if only someone had done something.
Yeah.
Like, his whole life, no one did a thing. Like, where were the teachers that noticed anything wrong? Other parents, parents of friends? Like, where was anyone?
Neighbours.
Anyone? Like,
yeah, literally nobody.
But this is real life for you. Well, it's not. It's a show. But what I mean is these... You know what I mean?
To be fair, I think Mary Alice made the biggest mistake
in this episode by not calling
social services.
Yeah, I don't think she should have given the mum so much grace.
No, I don't think so either. I think if I was in Mary Alice's position, I'd have just called social services. I would not have found her and said, you're lucky I haven't called social services. I would do it if it happens again. I wouldn't have done that.
Lynette then tells him to pack his bags. So he closes the door and she goes home. Now, let's wrap this fajita up. Eddie wraps up his... Like Eddie's mum. Eddie wraps up his mum...
Like a fajita.
...in a shower curtain and puts her in the back of his car, which is apparently a nod to Psycho.
Yeah.
While Mary Alice finishes what she was speaking about at the start of the episode, she opened the episode saying, you may wonder what makes a monster, blah, 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 blah. And she finishes by saying that monsters are made by other monsters. So, speaking ill of the dead, she's just died, Mary Alice.
Right? The disrespect.
So, no sympathy for Eddie's mum here.
No, none at all, none at all. Because Eddie's mum has been the true monster from the very beginning.
Yeah.
It all started with Eddie's mum being so desperate for love herself. Because even she, when Eddie's dad was leaving, Eddie's mum was saying, don't do this, you can't leave me here alone, like I can't do this without you. And then later on she admits to Mary Alice, I really need a man. So even Eddie's mum has been so incredibly desperate for love. So it starts with that. Eddie's seen that attitude from his mum, and then it's just kind of progressed through that, because Eddie's mum was not satisfied with the love that her son would give her.
Yeah.
And Eddie was not getting the love from his mother. So monster creates monster creates monster. So there are possible timeline issues. So the first timeline issue that people seem to be confused with is Eddie's age, because you see Eddie spending an awful lot of time around the Scarvo boys. And so most people believe he is the same age as the Scarvo boys.
Yeah, like possibly a year older or younger, but around the same age.
The Scarvo boys are 4 years younger than Danielle. But in this episode, it is stressed that Eddie and Danielle are at school together.
Yeah.
Because Danielle has a crush on Eddie. Or no, Eddie has a crush on Danielle. So what age is Eddie?
Maybe he just likes younger girls.
Maybe.
Oh.
But then throughout this entire season, we have seen Eddie hanging out with Danny and Anna as well. And they are younger than the Scarvo boys. So there's confusion with Eddie's age.
Although he's hanging out with one of the Scarvo boys with Danny. Yeah. And so he could be hanging out with them primarily as a group.
Mm.
How old is he? Is he in between? But, oh, well, that's interesting.
And then the next timeline confusion is the whole Hodge thing, where Bree introduces herself as Bree Hodge, even though at this time most people think that she would have been Vanderkamp, because she hadn't met Orson yet.
She must be Vanderkamp if
Danielle's still in school. Danielle's still in school, which means that most people do believe that she would be a Vanderkamp. However, in season three, Danielle does have that storyline where she is having sex with her history teacher.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And Bree marries Orson in season three, like the very beginning of season three.
So she could be a Hodge, actually.
So she could, in theory, be a Hodge.
So the whole nun in the whole nunnery thing could have happened during high school time.
It could have been college.
Yeah,
could have been uni. Like, she could have been with her uni professor.
Either way, Eddie wouldn't really have been able to have a crush and try and woo her.
No.
At that particular time.
So it's either that Eddie went to university with her, which I highly doubt that he did, at which point Bree would have been a Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
Or Eddie went to secondary school with her, at which point that is what I'm likely to believe, and Bree was technically a Vanderkamp and introduced herself incorrectly in this episode.
There's no way Eddie went to college.
I don't think so.
There's no way.
So, yes, so those are the timeline issues that most people generally talk about with this episode.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a wibbly-wobbly mishmash of writing. It's fine.
But overall, I do think that they worked.
It's
particularly
fun.
Around Susan's storyline. They worked the whole Susan-Mike drama into the Eddie sort of story quite well.
That must be really fun when you're coming in as a writer and you're doing like back like stuff in the past and you're like, yeah. Oh, well, it must have happened around this time.
Yeah. So I do think this overall seems to be quite a favourite mm-hmm. of an episode with the fans. It got a mixed reception when it first aired, as most episodes of Desperate Housewives tend to do, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
But with fans, this is generally considered one of the better episodes, and I would agree with it. I would say it's up there as one of my favourite episodes alongside Bang.
So let's move on to our next segment where Joel is going to give us the gayest and the straightest moments. So what do you have for the gayest moment?
So my award for gayest moment, I would say that it goes to because when I watched the episode, I was like, oh, I can't really find a gay moment, like one that's really gay. And so I was like, maybe I'll think of one as we're talking about it and then you might help give me some insight into something. But no, I don't really think there was a particularly gay moment.
There's not much that's gay about true crime to me.
No. Oh, it goes to Susan for breaking it up with her husband and wanting to drown her sorrows in a double chocolate brownie.
Yeah.
That's very grasping at straws, but we'll give it to Susan.
I mean, it's like the gays and the girls, and that counts.
No, it goes to Susan for getting married.
It goes to Susan for getting married.
Yeah, for getting married, like, 6 weeks after telling Eddie that she's no longer with her husband.
Fair. Okay. And then what do you have for straightest moment?
So my award for straightest moment is it rude to give Eddie the straightest moment for being an incel? Like, is that rude to straight people?
I don't know. Are there gay incels? I haven't heard of one.
I've never heard of a gay incel. This is why I didn't give Eddie straightest moment last week, because I knew I was going to be giving him straightest moment this week. So, Eddie, you get straightest moment this week. So now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
So my award for
best parent of the episode.
Now, this might be a bit obvious, but sometimes the most obvious and uncontroversial choice is the most obvious for a reason, and it's because it's right. So the best parent this week is going to Lynette.
Obviously, for playing charades with her kids, yeah.
True, but also for asking Eddie to move in with her to get him out of that place. Very yeah. Nice parent behaviour.
So who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for
worst parent of the episode.
Now, I gave it to Eddie's mum, Barbara, for her abusive and neglectful behaviour towards Eddie since his father moved out. And I thought, I could easily give it to the dad as well, because he did just say, I didn't want one anyway, and then up and leave.
Yeah.
But the mum, who was responsible for looking after him after that whole time, did not do it well.
Yeah. From our point of view, the dad had one negligent moment, and the mum had a lifetime's worth moments.
She had a whole lifetime as a single parent to still make him feel loved, but she chose abuse and neglect.
Yeah.
She chose to even just blame him for ruining her whole life. So, bravo, fucking bravo, everybody. That was season 6, episode 20, Epiphany. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments, and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram @boyfriendsreview.
Our email address is boyfriendsofyou@outlook.com, and the artwork is done by Louis, who you can find on Instagram at docredmonkdesign, and there's a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, but if you do leave us a review, can you please message us and say that you left a review, because when I check them, I have to check per country, and there's so many countries. So just tell me if you left a review, say what country, and I'll have a look that way and then read it. So join us next time when we'll be back in your ear holes with season 6, episode 21, A Little Night Music. So see you then, guys.
Bye.
Bye.